Hello guys, and welcome to this Ant Mini Europe podcast round two. As you may have noticed from the previous episode from UKIO, we are the voices of Radcast, but we're doing a collaboration with Ant Mini Europe, so we're pleased to bring you their second ever podcast.
Today we're joined by Dr. Giles Maskell. Dr. Maskell is a consultant radiologist at the Royal Cornwall Hospital. He served as RCR president between 2013 and 2016. And in addition to his day job, he's a regular contributor to BMJ Opinions and Ant Mini Europe, writing many thought-provoking articles on issues ranging from radiological errors to place-based rivalry and workplace elitism.
Yeah, whilst preparing for the interview, I read quite a lot of your articles and must say they are really well written. Very easy to read, succinct, but there's always an underlying important message there. So it's great to speak to you now and pick your brains a bit more about some of the topics that you've written about.
Thanks very much.
So, Dr. Maskell, how did you get involved in writing for BMJ Opinions and Ant Mini Europe?
It's a good question. I got involved with Ant Mini because, you know, as a very popular website.
As a popular person, I thought you could.
No. Ant Mini, you know, everyone knows about Ant Mini, radiologists, radiographers all read what's on Ant Mini. So I was contacted, obviously, by them when I was working at the college, and we, you know, used to exchange thoughts and things regularly and keep in touch. And it's a good way of, you know, when you're in a position like heading up a professional body, you want to choose every channel of communication that you possibly can, you know. So obviously the college have their own channels of communication, newsletters, monthly bulletins and so on. But also if there are websites out there that a lot of people read, you want to make use of them as well. So we used to use Ant Mini as well for getting certain messages out to people. The BMJ is an interesting one because I, you know, over many years I've frequently complained to the BMJ about their coverage of radiology. I mean, you guys are probably too young to remember, but they used to, you know, if they printed anything about radiology, A, it was usually written by a surgeon rather than a radiologist. If they put any images on, they were usually back to front or upside down and coloured in, kind of thing, you know, and that was unfortunately the sort of history of radiology in the BMJ. I've said this to them before, so I don't mind saying it publicly. So I thought, you know, I've been telling for years, you need to improve your coverage of radiology. And nothing much seemed to be happening, so I thought, all right, well, I'll write some myself and see what happens. So those of you who know, BMJ Opinion is free access. Basically, anyone can submit stuff to BMJ Opinion if you've got something to write about. And I wrote a couple of things, and they were kind enough to publish them. And then if they like the stuff, it sometimes goes into the print journal as well, and then loads of people see it.
And do you feel writing for BMJ Opinions and Ant Mini gave you a bit more freedom and flexibility to say what you really think rather than, I suppose, more sterile official RCR press releases?
Well, certainly. I think it's fair to say that in my experience, an RCR press release is a lot harder to put together because it's not, you know, it can't be just an opinion. Yeah. Whereas if you're writing for a website that's called Opinion, then you can say what the hell you like, basically, and within reason, within reason. So, yes, press releases can be quite difficult to craft.
So what's kind of your motivation to continue to write these pieces?
I feel, as I mentioned before, I feel the BMJ particularly, it's read by a massive number of people. You know, you wouldn't believe how many people actually read the BMJ, and people from right across, you know, the medical and even non-medical people as well read the BMJ. It's got a really wide coverage. So if you've got a message that you want to get out there, it's a pretty good way of doing it. You know, I get stopped by people I didn't even know could read who tell me that, and I'm not mentioning the orthopaedic surgeons here, but you know, telling me that they've seen stuff in the BMJ, you know, and you think, wow, really? It has a very wide coverage. It's a good way of getting messages out, and they quite, you know, they like these days the sort of slightly opinionated pieces which I've been writing.
So I suppose you write about a whole host of topics. Do you ever get any negative feedback? What's the response like generally?
It's very interesting. I mean, most commonly, you don't get much response at all. A few people you know will kind of either drop you an email or see you in the corridor and say, oh, yeah, I like that piece or whatever. And occasionally your friends, you know, send you a supportive message. But quite often you hear nothing at all. When I've had a lot of feedback has been usually when I've been writing about errors and discrepancy and things that go wrong, because people, that always kind of fires people up, the notion of things going wrong. And everyone's got opinions on that. And thankfully, so far, people have mostly agreed with what I've said, so I've not had a lot of negative feedback.
Which pieces have had the biggest response?
Yeah, definitely the error thing. You're starting out in radiology, and one of the things you learn pretty quickly is A, we have a massive disadvantage over the rest of the profession in that everything is there in black and white forever afterwards kind of thing. You know, yeah. So if you get something wrong, it's there for everyone to see and to go back and whatever. So I used to say sort of jokingly that radiology is getting easier because quite soon everybody will have a previous scan to compare with kind of thing, you know, the rate at which we're scanning people. But actually, by the same token, it's getting more difficult because everyone will have a previous scan that you can go back and look at and say, oh yeah, there was the thing that we should have seen last time, could have seen last time, whatever it is. Kind of, you know, there was a little something there that we didn't report or whatever it is. So the stuff about error definitely gets the most interest. Mm.
Do you reckon there's anything we can really do to effectively reduce errors, or do we just accept that they're inevitable, everyone makes them, there's a 5% error rate and leave it at that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think, you know, it's a little bit like... it's not a great parallel, but we know that accidents are going to happen on the motorways kind of thing. Car accidents are going to happen, but it doesn't mean we all drive dangerously kind of thing because we say, well, accidents can happen anyway kind of thing. So there is actually quite a lot we can do to keep a lid on and minimise the errors. And that's accepting at the same time that some error is going to happen. You know, radiology is not, you know, it's not a yes or no always. It's a process of interpretation. So, you know, there's plenty of evidence showing that if you say the same radiologist, the same images, they'll come up with a different interpretation on different occasions, you know. And the more complex the imaging, CTMR, the more the rate that happens kind of thing. So we are going to make mistakes, we're going to interpret things differently in hindsight from how we did first up. It's going to happen, but it doesn't mean that we can't do stuff to try and keep a lid on it.
And I suppose you've also written about the discrepancy between how patients think, or the error rate patients perceive in radiology, and what is actually the case, and maybe we should communicate to.
I think that's I think that's the single biggest professional issue facing radiology at the moment. That I think, because people sometimes used to ask me when I was at the college, you know, what's the acceptable error rate for a radiologist? Well, you know, if you're the patient, there is no acceptable error rate. You're not going to shrug and say, oh yeah, you missed my cancer, well that's fair enough kind of thing. You know, it's not acceptable to the patient. So from a patient's point of view, there is not an acceptable error rate. But from a professional point of view, there is an inevitable error rate. So bridging that level of understanding between what we know goes on in radiology and what the public thinks goes on is a really big issue for us now. And it's come into stark relief with all the stuff about the duty of candor that you've probably heard of, whereby we now have a duty. We've always had a professional duty to be honest and open with patients, but we now have, organisations now have a statutory duty actually to explain to patients what went wrong and why and what we've learned as a result and so on. And this is a big issue for radiology because of the volume of radiology errors that go on.
So you wrote an interesting piece about place-based rivalry. I'm just wondering where that stemmed from.
Oh, cheeky question. It's not one place in particular. I think there's a sort of shortcut in a way to boosting our own self-esteem is to kind of rubbish other people, you know, and you kind of see that. And you guys will have worked in different places and you'll know that if you work in Hospital A, they spend their time telling you they're great and Hospital B are rubbish kind of thing. And if you get them moved to Hospital B, you'll get the same story the other way around kind of thing, you know. The fact is, and I've done a fair bit of travelling around the country, by and large, there are not huge differences in the quality of service that people get in different places, by and large. Obviously some exceptions, but I think people do identify and build a sense of their own importance sometimes around the place in which they work.
Yeah.
I think things have got better. You know, when I was a medical student, the teaching hospital at which I worked, every single lecture or ward round included some comment about how they were great and everywhere else was rubbish. Kind of thing. You know, that was absolutely part of the culture. And I think that culture is slowly changing.
Mm. Okay, one of the other things you've written about a lot is the impact of ever-increasing workloads on the specialty, whether that be errors or incidental omas or scanxiety, all these great radiology words, and also about productivity in radiology. So what does productivity mean to a radiologist? Is it simply getting to the bottom of that work list and clearing those backlogs, or to be measured by other things?
I mean, that's a really good question. I've written about this in Aunt Minnie, and the first thing you have to understand is that, as always in life, we tend to measure what is easiest to count kind of thing. So the reporting is the easy bit to count, or the numbers of procedures if you're an interventional radiologist. But actually, reporting only constitutes about a third of a radiologist's job, you know, in a traditional hospital environment. Obviously different if you're working for a teleradiology company or whatever, but in a traditional hospital environment, it's about 35-40% of a radiologist radiologist's job consists of reporting. The rest might include procedural work, hands-on work, ultrasound intervention, MDT meetings, consultation, all the rest, all the other jobs that we do as radiologists, service development, research, teaching, all the rest of it. So unfortunately, the reporting obviously is the easiest bit to measure, so that's what people tend to count.
What managers care about
for the simple reason that if you don't report it, they've got to pay someone else to do it, kind of thing. So there's a very obvious price tag attached to reporting, and that's why reporting gets a lot of interest and a lot of attention in terms of productivity. But there is a lot more to being a productive radiologist than simply churning a lot of reports.
Would you rather a radiologist who gets through prodigious numbers but has a slightly higher error rate, or one that is a bit more precise, very, very good, accurate, but doesn't get through as much work?
That's a kind of pointed question, and I think I've addressed that in one of the pieces I've written to a degree, which is that actually, you know, there isn't a linear relationship between the number of studies you report and the number of mistakes you make, kind of thing. You know, it's too simplistic to say, oh, if I report twice as fast, I'm going to make twice as many mistakes. It's not that simple. Kind of. There are all sorts of other factors which confound that. The other thing which I stress in the piece about productivity is how much the sort of non-obvious things, like how we behave to each other, how we interact with each other, you know, how we what kind of atmosphere we create in the department, what impact that has on people's performance. And one of the things I'll be talking about at the conference here in Liverpool is the impact that each of us has on the people we work with, which is not something we think about too much sometimes. But you know, there are people who you come into work and you see them there and you smile and you think, oh, great, you know, Jamie's here, kind of thing. We can you know, it's going to be a good day. Maybe not. And then there's other people, you know, you come into work and you think, oh my God, he's here, kind of thing.
I'm going home. Because
I know he's going to stop me in the corridor for a long moan about something, kind of thing, so I'm not going to get any work done and all the rest of it. Nothing personal.
No, not taken. So do you think, how well equipped do you think radiologists are to cope with the sort of demands of the increase in workloads and the future demands? I know you wrote one article called "The Practice of Radiology Needs to Change," where you spoke about how we're still basically applying the same methods of working to how we did decades ago, but scans take 30 minutes to report now compared to 30 seconds back then. So,
yeah, I think that the point I was making in that article was that, you know, I think that the traditional model whereby one person looks at a set of images on one occasion and produces what is the definitive report is probably not fit for purpose in this day and age. We know for a fact that if you show the same radiologist the same study on two different occasions, they'll come up with a different interpretation quite often. So actually, you know, if you show it to more than one person, then you're likely to get a more refined, perhaps better interpretation. And double reporting has been a feature of mammography reporting in the screening program for a while, although that's under question at the moment. And I think in the future, you know, one of the potential advances to do with artificial intelligence will be to act as a second reader, if you like, so that actually it will hopefully flag up the obvious things that I've missed. It might get me to look at certain things again and say, well, actually, yes, I do definitely mean what I said there, kind of thing, you know, or I don't, kind of thing. Or actually, perhaps I was too definite about that and it might be something else or whatever it is. So this is one of the potential future uses of artificial intelligence.
So you touched on that you like to, you know, maintain happiness in a department. It's something that you've written about. What have you done in your department to kind of cultivate a culture of cohesion?
That's a good question. One of the things that we do is we all get together every morning. So at 9 o'clock in the morning, we have what we call a morning meeting for half an hour, where all the radiologists, consultants and trainees in the department at any one time get together, have a cup of coffee, show any interesting cases from the day before, ask any for a kind of specialist opinion on something, maybe if it's not readily available. People who've done the night shift might say, can you just have a look in this in the meeting. We also kind of sort out things like, you know, oh, somebody's called in sick, who's going to cover the ultrasound list, or that kind of thing. So it's a way of making sure that people accept a collective ownership of the service, kind of thing. You know, you talked about work workload, and there's a particular with the incredible pressures on people at the moment, it's almost too easy to say, well, actually I can't cope with thinking about the whole service, but I will just think about the MSK ultrasound service or the neck clinic or whatever it is called, and I'll just do my little bit and I'll leave other people to worry about the rest of it. So that's a real problem in radiology departments at the moment, and getting people by some means to take a collective ownership of the service. So we had a great example in my own department a couple of weeks ago. One of the interventional radiologists called in sick unexpectedly. So within half an hour, one of the others says, well, I was supposed to be on the ultrasound list. If someone else could do that, then I can cover the interventional list. And someone else said, yeah, well, I was reporting, so I can cover the ultrasound list and whatever. So it's all sorted, kind of thing. So people are collectively accepting responsibility for it. And that is a big key. So it's about collective ownership, and it's about mutual respect as well. You know, that's the other thing. It's too easy to diss other people. And you really need to believe in the colleagues that you work with and understand that they have expertise that you don't have, and that you can make use of that kind of thing.
If you're
treating each other in that kind of way, then a whole lot of other stuff gets a lot easier.
Do you think that the Royal College can or should be doing anything to help foster a happier speciality?
I think the Royal College has done a fair bit over time. There's a raft of documents which were published under the title of, I think it's called A Sustainable Future for Diagnostic Radiology,
yeah,
kind of thing, which actually covers some of this kind of stuff,
right,
about how we can make the job more enjoyable, more, as I say, sustainable, so that people can look to a long career and look to be doing something they're still going to enjoy in 30 years' time, kind of thing. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I regard myself as incredibly fortunate. I think I do a really interesting job and I really love doing it. But I appreciate that not everybody feels that positive about their work. And one of my missions is to convince radiologists that actually it's a great job.
Tough ask.
It doesn't have to be a tough ask.
It's
really
interesting.
I'll give you an example. I do appraisals in my trust, and I appraised a surgeon from a surgical specialty recently. And I said to him, you know, what do you think you're going to be doing in 10 years? This is a guy who's in his 40s, maybe. And I said, what do you think you're going to be doing in 10 years' time? And he said, well, much the same, really. And I said, well, really? I said, well, same operations? He said, yeah, I think so. I said, well, nothing new coming along? He said, well, I don't think so, not particularly, kind of thing. I said, well, you know, radiology, I've no idea what radiology will be doing in 10 years' time. It will have changed. What I know is it will have changed. We'll be doing different stuff, and it will be really interesting.
It's constantly changing.
It is continually
changing,
continually evolving.
I suppose, as well as happy colleagues, you want people to be interested, and you've also done some work, was it for the RCR, and one of your opinion pieces about how to retain the interest of radiologists over 55.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what are your views on that? Are you over 55?
Yeah, just a bit.
Oh, okay.
No, well over 55. I think I've had chances to talk to trust managers, chief executives and what have you over the years, and I always say, you know, we have such a crisis in radiology at the moment that we really need the older guys and girls to keep working. And if I were a chief executive of a trust, I'd be calling in every radiologist at the age of 55 and saying, what can we do to make your life more sustainable so that you can keep doing the job, you can do it. And the answer will differ with different people. You know, some people say, well, I can't face doing the overnight stuff anymore. You say, okay, well, we'll see about outsourcing that. Someone else will say, actually, you know, I can't do the whole breadth of everything anymore, but I think I could still do a really good job running the CT colonography service or whatever it is, kind of thing. So, okay, we'll do that, kind of, you know. So, and some will say, well, actually, my wife and I are going on a 3-month cruise or whatever, you know, can I have 3 months of unpaid leave or whatever it is. So,
more, you know, flexibility.
Yeah,
in the
yeah, exactly. More flexibility, which would allow us to keep people working longer. And I have to say, to be absolutely fair to my own organisation, about 2 years ago, my clinical director called me into the office one day and he said, Giles, he said, you're getting on a bit. He said, what can we do to keep you? I said, well done, Andrew. Well done. It's the right question. Thank you very much indeed. You don't have to do anything. I'm very happy where I am.
This is like a great place to work. Great, so thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us this afternoon and shedding a bit more light on some of the important topics you've written about. That's it from us for this Art Mini podcast.
So yeah, also feel free to check out our previous episode on the Art Mini website and also on anchor.fm/radcast. So thank you.
Thank you for listening.